So happy to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here. Pleased to welcome Jack Holseder to the program. He's a Madison historian, specializes on the life of Frank Lloyd Wright and his architecture. He's a board member of Frank Lloyd Wright, Wisconsin. Really a pleased to have him with us to talk about Frank Lloyd Wright and to talk about the events that are coming up this weekend, sort of to celebrate Frank Lloyd Wright's birthday. He'd been 140 years old this weekend. If you have some questions about the tour, there's a great tour coming up, and he's going to describe it for us, or about Frank Lloyd Wright himself or his architecture, boy, don't hesitate. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or in Madison at 263-1890, 263-1890. Give us a call with your questions and comments. Jack Holseder, welcome back. Nice to have you with us.
It's wonderful to be here. Thank you for asking.
I tell you what, we have a wonderful event coming. Let's talk. Just give us the outline here.
Well, it's our Right and Like tour. I can't remember how many years we've done it. It's about a dozen.
Yeah.
It's frankly a fundraiser to help support the activities of Frank Lloyd Wright, Wisconsin. The full name is the Frank Lloyd Wright, Wisconsin Heritage Tourism Program, which was started by the National Trust for Historic Preservation. And we promote, preserve, protect Wright's legacy in Wisconsin. And right now our principal activity is the restoration of one of six Wright buildings in Milwaukee in the 2700 block of West Burnham Street, the largest concentration of that sort in the country.
How many of his structures exist in Wisconsin? Do you know? Well, roughly.
E-gods. You know, how do you count the buildings at Taliesin? That's one of the problems. You know, what's a building? Mm-hmm. I always say between 40 and 50. It's really around 40. But you can extend that to little things here and there.
Have many been lost over the years?
Oh, sure. In Madison alone, we've lost three, really. One has been moved. And in Milwaukee, four have been lost. The Lake Geneva Hotel or Lake Geneva Inn has been lost. There have been losses. Even at Taliesin, Wright himself took down one of his own buildings.
I didn't like it.
Well, it was old and it was out of use and a problem for restoration. He didn't have any money either. So in the 1950s, he took down a building that he had designed in 1887.
What has made his architecture so enduring for so many people over the years?
Really, it's not so much it's the quality of the design and the relation of the design to the landscape. And also his innovative use of materials. And that is what a lot of people criticize, because when you're the first out of the gate using unusual and modern and newly developed materials, putting them to tests that they hadn't been tested for, and that's A, expensive, and B, problematic. Mm-hmm. So the problems arose.
Give me an example of something new and innovative that he did in his time.
His use of concrete is probably the most well known. While concrete is an old product and had been used for buildings even in the Midwest for hundreds of years, by the 1840s we were having grout buildings, which is essentially a form of concrete made in Wisconsin, but reinforced concrete so you could do wonderful things with it rather than just have plain walls and mm-hmm. you adding rebar and strengthening it and giving it the properties to be cantilevered. That's something that he really pioneered. He didn't always listen to the engineers, but then he would design something and then challenge his engineers to come up with a way to build it.
And I'm sorry, go ahead.
And that of course led to problems. But the other quality of his work was that he designed such beautiful things that no one else has really designed anything like. Calatrava now comes close. He stresses materials. His bridge designs have become world famous, and you see them imitated all over the place. Well, that's the sort of guy Wright was, and that's why there were problems.
talking about Frank Lloyd Wright and the 2007 Prairie on the Lakes events that are coming up this weekend with Jack Holseder. If you'd like to join in with a question or comment, the number to call 1-800-642-1234. Or in the Madison area, you can reach us at 263-1890, 263-1890. Give us a call with your questions and comments. Because it's his birthday, kind of, this is, I mean, it makes sense to have an event.
Right. It was June 8th, and we do have an event at the Friday the 8th, at an evening event in Lake Geneva. And that's to show off buildings by people whom he knew, and one of whom he taught. So it's a really nice event. But Saturday is the big tour, the day after his birthday. And that's 12 buildings on Lakes Geneva and Delavan will be featured. And there are 7 Wright buildings that you can see. 2 of them you are walk-arounds only, but 5... You can enter, and that's a real treat.
And that's a rare treat, too,
I would think. Yes, it is a rare treat, particularly at this price level. Other tours like this go on around the country, and we charge $45. Other places will charge $25 to get into one right house.
$25 a house.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, this is a really good deal. And you also get to see some things that are not ordinarily open to the public. There's a wonderful bed and breakfast by a Milwaukee architect, E. Townsend Mix, from the 1870s in Delavan. You don't have to pay extra to go there. It's a tour this week on Saturday. And then the observatory at Williams Bay, which is a wonderful place by Henry Ives Cobb, erected early in the life of the University of Chicago, for which it was the major astronomical study point. And it's going to be closed soon. The university is selling it. And you know, go there. There's a wonderful arts and crafts room filled with furniture in the Stickley furniture in the place. Though there's a new library, relatively new. It's 40 years old, with some more recent additions in Lake Geneva, designed by a Wright apprentice named Jim Dresser. And also in Lake Geneva, there's a terrific building by a contemporary of Wright's, Robert Spencer, who had a Milwaukee background. And it's just a wonderful structure, imitative of Wright, but designed 10 years after he was using the particular style that it is in. And that's always the way, you know. Somebody picked up on Wright, and, you know, since his death, there's all this imitative stuff still going on. It's amazing. And then there's a brand new house that takes off after the Honeycomb House, the Hanna House at Palo Alto near Stanford University. But the Wright structures are all on Lake Delavan, and there are 4 on one property, the Jones property. That's the most complete estate of Wright buildings in existence. And it's been reassembled by the owners who've had it now for maybe 10, 12 years. And they have put it back into the condition that it was in 1900 through 1903 when it was completed. It was designed in 1900, and buildings were erected between 01 and 03. And they are magnificent and beautifully gardened, beautifully maintained. It's the sort of thing that you don't get to see unless you come on a tour like this. Then we have one other cottage open, which is the design that Wright made for the Little family in Wayzata, Minnesota. That's the house that was dismantled. The living room is in the Metropolitan Museum of Art. Now, they also designed a little cottage for that property to be for guests and for summer use nearer the lake, rather, you know, right at the lake shore rather than set far back. And that was never built. But the same year, Wright gave the design to a man named Charles Ross. That it was erected on Lake Delavan, and it's open. And next door, Ross's daughter built a small little place. And that's not open, but walk around. And we now know that the hand of Walter Burley Griffin is very obvious in that place. And then there's another walk around for a gatehouse for the Wallace estate. Wallace was a neighbor of Wright's in Oak Park, Illinois. Wallace was a developer and a hardware manufacturer, both. And as a developer, he developed land around Delavan Lake. And his wife was from Delavan. And there you have it. I mean, it's really a terrific tour.
You know, I think the history of the homes, the people who built the homes and worked with Wright on those homes is some fascinating stories there.
It's almost always involves networks of people. 15, 20 years ago when we were working on there was a huge exhibition in Madison in 1989, and we were working on that for a number of years beforehand, and we kept discovering all these unexpected networks of people. There was so much interlocking. One house led to another, or one project led to another, et cetera, and that's exactly what we're finding with the buildings at Delavan Lake, because no one has really written the major story about these places that needs yet to be written. We've done some surface research, but it hasn't been done in depth yet. But that's exactly right. And he was, he also influenced so many designers in ways that now they aren't even aware of. Years ago, I took an architect from California on a tour of Taliesin, and he didn't like Wright, but it was decided that he had to go on this tour. His father-in-law, or his grandfather-in-law, wanted him to see this. And so we took him around, and he was there maybe 20 minutes, and he was very skeptical. And all of a sudden, he turned to me, and he said, "I had no idea what an influence this man has had on all of our careers just by looking at Taliesin." So, you know, and this is a guy who didn't like him.
Jack Wall-Cedar, our guest today, as we talk with him about Frank Lloyd Wright and 2007 Prairie on the Lakes, an event that's coming up. He's been talking a little bit about it, and we've not covered it all, but we will. You can join in at 1-800-642-1234, or in the Madison area, you can reach us at 263-1890, 263-1890. Give us a call. I'm Larry Mueller. Jim Packard, our producer, and you are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking about Frank Lloyd Wright today with our guest, Jack Wall-Cedar, Madison historian, specializing on the life of this Wisconsin architect and a board member of Frank Lloyd Wright Wisconsin. And the organization it's a fundraiser, frankly, but it's really a great chance for you and for me to have a look at several of the structures that Frank Lloyd Wright built in the Lakes Geneva and Delavan areas. Again, if you want to join us at 1-800-642-1234 or in Madison at 263-1890, we'd be glad to have you on. You can ask your questions. And there's also a boat tour, is there not? There's the walk around and walk through, but there's also a boat tour.
Yeah, there are three events. On Friday evening, we're giving a reception at, you know, I'm crazy here, just a minute. We're at Horticultural Hall, which is a Robert Spencer building. He was in Lake Geneva. That's $25. The tour is on Saturday, 9 to 5, and that is $45 for non-members. And then on Sunday, there's a very special tour of Black Point, a huge summer house just now being opened by through the Department of Administration by a local trust. It's a three-story, wonderful dwelling on Lake Geneva, or Geneva Lake, as they say there. Lake Geneva is the name of the town. The name of the lake is Geneva Lake. You start at Williams Bay, and you get food, you get a tour of the lake, you get a tour of the house. The house opens to the public for tours in a week or so. I don't know exactly when. But this is an advance look at this brand new Wisconsin historic site, which is spectacular. I know the house pretty well, designed by an architect named Adolf Cadell for the Seip family, and they were brewers in Chicago.
That the Seip family story is a great
It's amazing.
Tell us, before we go to the phone, tell us a little about the Seip family.
Oh, they came from Germany, like most brewers. I can't remember the place. The great-grandson, Bill Peterson, lives in another house adjacent to the big old family summer house now. And he has assembled this complete history. They came here with virtually nothing, but were very enterprising. Finally ended up owning a small brewery after being somewhat in the hotel business, et cetera. Then, fortunately, Chicago burns down, but the Seip Brewery does not.
And all the other breweries
do. And so, business boomed. You know, all those people in Chicago still wanted their beer while they're rebuilding their city. And they became extremely prosperous, the Seips, from the 1870s into the early 1880s, and then entered into the higher end of German society in Chicago, and built a summer home in the, I think it's 1883, on Lake Geneva, after building a huge pile of a stone house on Prairie Avenue in Chicago. And Mr. Seip knew he wasn't going to live very long, and so... No, he made arrangements. The family is secure even until today. And they hung on to the Chicago furniture, as it became outdated, was shipped up to Lake Geneva and put this old stuff in the in this big summer house with, you know, a dozen bedrooms and so on. A little short on bathrooms.
But, 20 rooms, I think.
Oh, yeah, it's a huge place. You could seat... Bill told me at one point they had a last big dinner there with matching service. That meant the silverware and the glassware and the china all matched for 100, I think it was 101 or 102 persons sitting down. The dining room table will seat 40.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, it's one of those lavish Victorian estates filled with furniture that is... It's a catalog of 19th century and early 20th century Victorian furniture.
An excellent Victorian.
High mid-range.
Yeah.
A little of it was uniquely designed. Hmm. But, you know, they went to the Chicago World's Fair and they liked a set that was on view there. So they bought it, and there it is.
Well, let's take a call here. Dave in Phillips, it's your turn. Thanks for calling. Hi.
Yeah, I was wondering about if you knew anything about his wife's murder, and was that in Wisconsin? And if it was that house rebuilt after it was burnt? Or?
Oh, yeah. She wasn't his wife. At that point, he was still married to his first wife, Catherine. In 1908, 1909, he fell in love with a woman named Amema Borthwick Cheney, who was the wife of a client. She herself was a client. They fell in love, and then in 1909, they took off and went to Europe together, abandoning their families. Mr. Cheney and Mrs. Cheney divorced, but Wright's wife did not accept a divorce from him, and his mother was against it. She was still living. So he built Taliesin at Spring Green for himself and Mema and her children and his children when they came to visit, which they did. Tragically, in August of 1914, Taliesin, which had been built in 1911-1912, was burned virtually to the ground by a man named Julian Charlton, Carl Charlton. And he was, I can never remember if it was Carlton or Charlton. I'm sorry about that. At any rate, he was deranged for whatever reason. And seven people were killed in that tragedy, including Mema and her two children, which was a terrible loss. Mm. And then the others were workmen on the property, who were farmers and builders and carpenters and that sort of thing, because the estate was still being built and added to. Wright was in Chicago at the time working on Midway Gardens. He was finishing it. And he came here, of course, and he rebuilt the house into what is known as Taliesin II. The basic footprint is pretty much the same, but there are quite quite a number of distinctive elements in the second Taliesin, which also burned in 1925, thanks to, this time it was a mechanical failure, gas system problem, and or an electrical system problem. I can't remember which. But at any rate, that house burned as well, and he rebuilt it a third time. And then he kept changing the house throughout his lifetime. He was forever tinkering with it. So although the footprint remains largely the same, there are numerous differences between Taliesins 1 and 3.
So he probably would have died that day as well, had he been...
Had he been there, he certainly would have been among the victims. There were a number of persons who did not die, who were injured or burned, badly burned in this fire. And the arsonist murderer axed people to death. He had a hatchet, and as they were trying to escape, he slammed it into their skulls.
And is that house for... you can go there for...
Oh, yes. Yes, you can tour the house. Taliesin Preservation Incorporated runs the tours there, and I believe the number is 608-588-7900.
All right, well, thank you.
You're welcome.
All right, thanks, 608-588-7900. Thanks again for calling, Dave. Appreciate it. Mary Ann in Plain, Wisconsin. We'll go to you next. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hi. I grew up on the west side of Chicago, and I remember taking tours of one or two of the homes in Oak Park.
Oh, yes.
But my question is, I stayed at the Imperial Hotel in Tokyo, and I know they were pulling it down. And I just wondered, did somebody save it and move it somewhere else?
Well, part of it was saved. The entrance area was taken to what amounts to an old world Wisconsin for Japan. And so the entrance is there. It's a little prettified. A friend of mine just sent me photographs of this a couple weeks ago, and I haven't even sent him a note thanking him. Thank you, Mike. At any rate, it's there, and it's a place where weddings are held. Etc. It's still very famous. Japan loves Frank Lloyd Wright. There's a lot of attention paid to him. He designed other buildings there, a school and a residence and a couple of residences. Mm-hmm. And they're still in existence and much loved in Japan.
Thank you very much.
Yeah. You're welcome.
Thanks very much for calling. You can join in, too, at 1-800-642-1234. Or in Madison at 263-1890, 263-1890. Give us a call with your questions or comments as we talk about Frank Lloyd Wright. And we're also talking about the great event this weekend where you'd have a chance to view many of the homes that he built. How much work did Wright do internationally? He worked in Japan, other countries as well.
Well, Canada, but it's really Canada, Japan, the United States. He designed things for Iraq, Iran, a huge palace in Iran, a giant development in Iraq, never built. The Iranian palace was built, but nothing in Iraq. At Baghdad, it was, opera house, the whole thing. He designed a house for himself in Fiesole, I think it is. Fiesole, outside Florence, Italy, not built. There were other things. I think that's it, but I'm not, maybe there was something from India. Oh, Egypt. There was a resort for Egypt, outside Alexandria, on the Mediterranean.
Now, did he incorporate the designs prevalent in the country, or did he just go his own way?
No, he was always responsive to local, or I should say, national traditions. No matter where he was designing, and always responsive to the environment of the specific countries, and even within the United States, designs varied radically from a region, section or section to the country. And, his And he also designed for the purpose very, very carefully. So that the cottages you will see on Lake Geneva have all been painted white, et cetera, or nice modern colors. Basically, they were brown and in the woods when they were made. By the way, we haven't given the number for people to call if they want to order tickets.
And yes, let's do that.
That's 608-287-0339. Or you can also go to writeinwisconsin.org.
Writeinwisconsin, all one word.
.org.
.org. So 608-287-0339. You can call and get tickets that way for this weekend. Or just go online to writeinwisconsin.org and you can order them offline.
Online, exactly.
Online.
Yeah. If you pay at the door, it's $5 more. And we offer tickets at the site. There is going to be a ticket booth at the intersection of South Shore Drive and Highway 50, just outside Delavan. It's on the east-southeast side of Delavan.
Mary and Madison, your turn. Hi, Mary.
Hello. Yes, I'm curious about his ancestors, whether or not they came to Wisconsin for the lead and zinc mining, and if how much of a Celtic aesthetic or influence is reflected in his art.
Wright is the descendant of two different families, the Lloyd Joneses, who came to Wisconsin from Wales in I think it was 1844-45, came as farmers. They were not lead miners. They were part of the Welsh group that settled around Exonia in Waukesha County. Then as the railroad moved west across Wisconsin, so did they, getting better farmland along in the Wisconsin Valley. First, they rented land actually near a Lone Rock, and then during the Civil War, moved from that land to their own property on the south side of the Wisconsin River and have been there ever since as farmers. It happened that they bought land that had been involved with lead mining, but they themselves had never done any mining or smelting or things of that sort. On his father's side, he was an old New England guy from Connecticut. His father was born, I can't remember where in Connecticut, but was his family was very active in liberal religion. They were farmers. They were also, one of the members of that family actually was a very early landscape architect. And his father was a musician and a minister. He was sort of the dreamer of all of his immediate Wright family, but there were many preachers in that family as well. So Wright had preachers on both sides of his family. He had designers probably on both sides. The Celtic influence, I'm not so sure of that. That was not much emphasized. On both sides of his family, the people were very interested in the new, the modern, the change. Transcendentalism for the folks in Connecticut and the Wisconsin group, the Welsh family, also bought largely into. They came over here as Unitarians, rural Unitarians, dissenters in England, and they were very much interested in the new and the modern. So he always looked forward and not back very much.
Hmm. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks very much for calling, Mary. How did his mother and father meet?
His father had been married before, and he lost his wife in childbirth. And he had been superintendent of schools for Richland County, which is basically right across the river from Taliesin and so on and so forth. His mother had been a teacher working for or under Mr. Wright.
I am.
So there you were.
That's how it worked. Dennis in Waukesha, it's your turn now. Hi, Dennis. Thank you for calling.
Hi, how are you?
Good. Thanks for calling.
I have a question. I'm originally from Racine, where the Johnson's Wax buildings are, and he designed and they built the research tower for Johnson's Wax, which I've heard is uninhabitable because it sways too much or there's problems in that regard. Do you know if there are any plans to shore that up so that people can actually go in it or see it? And if you know anything, I'll take my answer off the air.
I know a little. It wasn't put out of use because of structural problems or swaying too much in the wind. Actually, it's pretty short as towers go. Actually, codes changed, number one. It has really only one exit per floor, which under fire regulations is a big no-no. Secondly, although it was built in the 1940s, very quickly, technology changed for scientific investigation requiring different kinds of materials. Even now, laboratories go out of date very, very rapidly. It turns out that single-story spaces are much more easily adapted and changed than a tall tower. It is not open. The tower is not open. It is used for storage. It doesn't really have any structural problems. I assume that the roof has had to be replaced from time to time, but all roofs have to be. I mean, every homeowner has got to reshingle or re-roof. But they've kept up the exterior beautifully. The Johnson Corporation spends an awful lot of money maintaining its right buildings in Racine. As I understand it, the Frank Lloyd Wright Building Conservancy, a national organization, also on that board, we're going to be visiting that part of the country this fall for our tour, and I think we might be able to get because there is an entrance. Two entrances for the two lower levels of that building. We will be shown them. But this does not happen very often.
Interesting. Thanks for calling, Dennis. Mary in Richland Center, your turn. Hi, Mary.
Hi, Larry. Hello, Jack.
Hi.
I too, like Mary Ann Plain, grew up on the west side of Chicago, and I'm here in Richland Center now. And I'm wondering if you know anything about the A.D. German warehouse that's here in Richland Center, what the status of that building is.
Okay. It's a wonderful building. It was done at about the same time Wright was working on the Imperial Hotel and a wonderful house in Milwaukee, the Bogk House, B-O-G-K. And it has this huge frieze around the top in cast concrete, made for cold storage of root vegetables, largely sugar beets. And this was a time during World War, just before World War I and just after, when sugar beet industry in Wisconsin really boomed. And so it was a wonderful building for that. And it's not been as successful in any other use, unfortunately. Well, it's been owned for a number of years by a gentleman who opens it for tours. But you have to have a party of 15 or more, and you call ahead. And I don't have the number with me, but if you look at our website, Frank Lloyd, writeinwisconsin.org, we give the information about how you, what number you call. It's open basically from Memorial Day to Labor Day, but only for larger groups. And I don't know how much it costs, but there is a fee.
So go to writeinwisconsin.org and you can get that information.
Right.
I want to go back to the events here before we take any other calls and just have you sort of recap what we've got going this weekend. Friday night, we have the birthday party.
The birthday party, $25. And it's nice. You get a lovely piece of cake, and you'll see a great building by one of Wright's buddies, Robert Spencer, who's also from Wisconsin. Saturday, the 9th, is the big tour, 12 different buildings, 7 of them by Wright, and $45, and 9 to 5. It's a big, it'll take you quite a while to go through all the buildings if you haven't seen them. So plan on a full day, or you can pick and choose. Then on Saturday is the Black Point boat tour of Geneva Lake, plus the inaugural tour in opening this house as a public site for the very first time in its 140 years of that house. 125.
Somewhere in there, yeah.
Roughly 125 years. And a wonderful house. And the furnishings are just terrific. And it's been beautifully landscaped and updated for touring. And a tour that's well worthwhile. You also get some food, $75.
Mm-hmm.
The quickest thing to do is either to go to our website, rideinwisconsin.org. You'll be able to find an easy reference to the tour. It's called Write and Like. And then you can also call the office, 608-287-0339. And our beleaguered beleaguered office manager, Sherry Shockler, will take your call.
608-287-0339. We have time, I think, for Paul in Milwaukee who has a question. Paul, hi. Thank you for calling.
Oh, hi. Thank you. I was wondering if your guest could comment on the interesting story behind the Seth Peterson cottage out near the Dells.
It's a wonderful story. Near the end of Wright's life, he died in 1959, a young man from Black Earth, Wisconsin, commissioned a cottage on Muir Lake, which is now in Muir Lake State Park. And things went wrong for him, and for whatever reason, he killed himself before the cottage was completed. And it was then subsequently bought by Chicagoans, I believe, and used for summer purposes. Then the DNR bought it, and it was incorporated into the park and was neglected for many years. Two things coincided. A woman named Audrey Lotch, the late Audrey Lotch, unfortunately, and the Wisconsin Historic Society Preservation people discovered that it was really being severely neglected by the DNR, and a conservancy was established. It was restored, and now it is available for rent, and it is an extremely popular Wright site.
Well, I tell you what, there are so many great stories, and the chance to view this is sort of, you just don't get this opportunity to see 12 buildings like this. I mean, it just doesn't.
No, it's a real deal. And it's there are a few places in the country that offer such tours. But the only comparable one is Wright Plus in Chicago, which costs more. It's really in Oak Park. And then our own, most of the Wright sites. And there are almost 60 places around the country that are open to the public on an admission basis. But to do this for places that are generally not open to the public is an unusual opportunity. And we do it once a year all over the state, wherever there are right places. And we were last here in 2001, I think. So it's every 6 years that you get something like this coming up. Now's your chance.
Thank you, Jack, so much. And again, let me give the number again. For tickets and more information, you can call 608-287-0339. Or to find out more as well, you can go to this website. It's this all one word, writeinwisconsin.org, writeinwisconsin.org. Thanks, Jack. Appreciate it very much.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Jack Holtzeder, historian specializing on the life of Frank Lloyd Wright, a board member of the Frank Lloyd Wright Wisconsin. And that's a nonprofit organization devoted to preserving and sharing Wright's Wisconsin legacy. And you know, part of the reason for these tours is to help that organization sustain itself and sustain the and preserve the buildings that Frank Lloyd Wright designed. So it's always great to support that organization. 608-287-0339 or go to writeinwisconsin.org. Well, we've been talking about design of buildings, Frank Lloyd Wright designs. There are other designers as well working here in Wisconsin, designing different kinds of things, including golf courses. And there are some beautiful golf courses in this state. And in fact, there's a new book out called Golf Wisconsin. Jeff Mayers and Jerry Poling are the authors, and Jeff Mayers with me coming up next to talk about Wisconsin's best public
golf courses. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.